I'd like to call the House Ways and Means Committee to order. Today is April 19th, 2023. Let the record reflect that it's 6:07 p.m. Today we have present with us Speaker Tilton, Representative McKay, Representative McCabe, Representative Groh, Representative Gray, and myself, Chair Carpenter. And thank you, Representative Stapp, for joining us. Just remind everybody to silence your cell phones. We've got Kevin Allen with House Records and Zach Lawhorn with the LIO assisting us tonight. Gentlemen, thank you. My staff, Kendra Broussard, will be the committee aide. Tonight on the agenda, we are taking up and amending HB 38 and HDR 2. Our intent is to move both of these items out of committee this evening. The deadline for amendments to these two pieces of legislation was set for 12 p.m. Monday, April 17th. We did not receive any amendments from the committee members, but I have three that I would like to offer. Two are for House Bill 38 and one for HDR 2. Before I invite the bill sponsors, I want to invite Deputy Finance Director Rob Carpenter to come forward and have a quick conversation. Two of the amendments I'm bringing forward are today would affect the fiscal plan modeling, and that's what we'll ask Mr. Carpenter to step us through. A couple iterations of the model for the spending limits. Good evening, sir. Please put your name on the record, and let's begin the presentation.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, Rob Carpenter, Legislative Finance Division, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I was asked by your staff to present a few modeling scenarios specifically to the Senate revisions that they proposed and then some regarding the amendments that you're proposing, Mr. Chairman. So I basically have a bunch of graphics. That's the wrong button. That will kind of depict things. This first slide, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, is one you all have seen. I'll just go through it real quick. Most of the slides look like this in various degrees. This is the current iteration of the bill of HDR 2 and HB 38 with the 14% versus 11.5%. Can they not see that?
It's
kind of small. Oh,
okay. It's down here.
Okay, we got it. Sorry.
Down there.
Got it. My bad. And then basically the bars on the bottom are the appropriations that are subject to the limit. And this is broken up into a historical perspective where the vertical line breaks it into, and then it goes into a projection. And this, you know, these, every one of these is based on certain variables, assumptions. The base, I guess I would say, is a 2.5% inflation rate, which is what Cowan Associates has projected for the Permanent Fund Corporation and all their projections, and a budget growth of 1.5%, and that's based on the governor's 10-year plan. So again, just picking some variables, and then this GDP growth matching that budget growth of 1.5%. So this here, you've seen this. It shows the blue dotted line is HB 38, basically keeping up with the appropriations at that growth rate, and then the HDR 2 at 14% above that, the red line right here.
We have a question here before we move on, Representative Groh.
Thank you very much, Chair Carpenter. Mr. Carpenter, there's a current statutory appropriations limit in our current Alaska statutes. Is that line shown on this graphic?
Through the chair, Representative Groh, it is not. And it mostly regarding, or I have exempted that because of the difference between the how it, you know, the constitutional appropriation limit is for a fiscal year versus in a fiscal year, and it. I had a graph the last time I presented that kind of showed the two combined, but it's really confusing and messy, so I've left it off given that both of these bills go to the four.
Okay, thanks. Yeah.
Please continue.
Yes, sir. Okay, next slide here. So I've highlighted the differences here to show what changes on the slide. Under this scenario, HDR 2 would go to the 15% that was established in the Senate version and the 12%, again, that was established in the Senate version. Excuse me. As you can see, the lines move somewhat. I have a slide later that shows the actual dollar values to get to an assumption and a an example here.
And just for the record here, for anybody that's listening, the changes that are showing up here in the highlighted, referring to HDR2 and HB38, are actually the changes that were made to the Senate versions of the bill in committee here just recently.
Yes, sir.
Not changes that were made to the legislation before this before us.
Correct. That's correct, Mr. Chair. And I'll try to depict each one of these as taking the current versions you have, but adjusting them with certain variables and what that looks like. Okay. So again, next slide here. I just for point of reference, I've increased HDR2 to 15.5% and HB38 to 12.5%, and you just see as the lines are moving up, rate increases. The lines go upwards, which all leads me to this. And that's a lot of numbers. I realize to me it looks like the Matrix. I can just see it. the point of this is I tried to get to, under these assumptions, I tried to get to kind of a rule of thumb of what every percent will represent. And it basically came down, you see the box on the bottom, and basically every percent of increase to the bill would be about $400 to $500 million of headroom or a decrease in the headroom.
Or additional spending.
Yes.
Underneath the cap.
Yes, sir.
The ability for the legislature to spend an additional.
Yeah, or the other way, inverse. So, and I could walk through these numbers, but I think that, basically all those graphs, these numbers depict that.
This is the data that's behind the graph.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
So moving on to the next iteration. Your staff asked me to change up the GDP growth rate to show that the only variables are they're not just the rates or the percentages that are applied to GDP, but the actual if you change inflation, you change the GDP growth GDP growth rate or the budget growth rate, what happens? In this scenario, I've gone back to what the bill actually represents, the 11.5% and the 14%, and I've changed GDP to 2.5%, the GDP growth, and what you'll see is in the out years, you start getting ahead of the budget growth in this scenario.
Can we pause here for just a second and talk about fiscal year 24 government amend? What would be the single bar that's colored differently, the darker orange and the blue above it, which is representing the operating appropriation and the capital appropriation? And the distinction between the blue line, the blue bar being above that bottom dashed line, what would be the HB 38 limit, and compare that to fiscal year 25, where there obviously is no appropriation for capital budget because that's next year's budget. But what is functionally happening between fiscal year 24 and fiscal year 25 in relation there? Because we're crossing the line in both of them.
Yeah, great observation, Mr. Chairman. And the coloring I tried to, represent in that FY24, we have firm numbers from the governor. His proposed budget out years are just projections. And you're right, the HB 38 limit is slicing through that capital budget line, which is the blue bar portion. And I believe what you're alluding to is in HDR2, there is an ability to exceed the appropriation limit with a two-thirds vote for capital projects in both bodies. And that would be a scenario here where that would be applicable in any out year under that scenario. So as long as it didn't exceed, the 14% represented in that.
So as we're looking at the chart here, and I know that we just bumped up to the 2.5% growth, the blue line, the blue bar above for fiscal year 24 is something that we're authorized to do under the current proposed legislation with a two-thirds vote. What about fiscal year 25? Does that represent any sort of capital spend, or is that all operating spend in fiscal year 25 projected?
Through the chair, or Mr. Chairman, that you're right. The out years are just spending in total. I have not differentiated capital budget because it's unknown at this point. That is just taking the 24 budget and growing it by 1.5%, and that's what that depicts. Some portion of that obviously will be capital spending, which, in this case, if you represent if you model it similar to 24 or look that it's going to, or consider that it's going to be similar to 24, that line will be again piercing through the capital budget, and and that would be could be authorized by the legislature with that two-thirds vote.
But in fiscal year 25, we're breaking that limit, and that would not be allowed under the current proposed legislation in fiscal year 25, because that isn't part of the capital spend.
Well, Mr. Chairman, so FY25 would include some capital spend that I don't have represented here. That's just a total budget picture. So there'd be an assumption that some of that expenditure would include capital spending. And it could be a significant amount. It could be similar to this year.
What's the relationship between the fiscal year 24 operating spend and the fiscal year 25 operating spend that's referenced here? It's just an increase by 1.5%, correct?
The operating FY25 bar represents total spend. It's not just operating.
Okay, yeah. My mistake.
Yeah, that's what I wasn't making myself very clear there.
So last point that I want to make on here, just have you touch on here. We've got 25, 26, and 27, it looks like, are all at or above the appropriation limit, HB 38 appropriation limit. But in out years 29 through 33, there's a gap between the top of the bar and the line, meaning that there's additional spend. And what would be the reasoning for why that gap materializes? Yes. That's because of the highlight that we've done.
Correct, Mr. Chairman. So under this scenario, the 2.5% GDP growth causes over time, given the five-year averaging, that the appropriation limit will exceed and be beyond what that budget growth projection is and provide that what you call headroom for additional spending.
Thank you. I'd let the record reflect that Representative Sadler joined us at probably 6:15. Appreciate it, sir. Okay, continue, please.
And this slide here, again, similar picture other than I've changed GDP to 3.5%, just to give another perspective. This is, again, the HJR 14.5%. Okay. This picture here switches it up a little bit. So this relates to your amendment, Mr. Chairman, going to a 11% on HB 38 and 13% on HJR 2. And again, this is reverting back to the 1.5% GDP growth. As you can see, the blue dotted line moves significantly below the budget projections I don't know the exact dollar amount, but what I can tell you actually, if you're dropping at 1% represents approximately $400 to $500 million. So 14% to 13% would be that $400 to $500 million, and then 11.5 to 11 would be roughly half of that. So that blue dotted line is dropping roughly $250 million, which could put, you know, it's putting pressure on the budget, keeping expenditure or appropriation pressure to keep that downward pressure, which I believe is your intent.
So, and I guess I'd pause here just to highlight, we've used the Fiscal Policy Working Group report as a recommendation for a fiscal plan that received bipartisan, bicameral support from a political agreement perspective. And part of that arrangement was an acknowledgement that some amount of reductions would be necessary within state spending. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I'm not sure if I've got the reports here with us, but that was roughly $100 to $200 million is what we agreed upon at that time, which is roughly what this graph represents, is about a $200 million reduction by changing the percentages in HB 38 and HDR 2 to reflect 13% and 11% as opposed to what they currently are. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Moving on to slide 9. Again, this is the 11% and 13% under the amendment, and I've increased the GDP growth to 2.5% just to give another perspective to show. And then I've done 3.5% on the next slide. Again, this is to show there are alternate scenarios. 1.5% is just baseline. If we do have a nice GDP growth rate and controlled spending, and the inflation factors also in here. I mean, there's a lot of variables that could play into how this plays out.
Thank you. And I think this helps me communicate what is most important to me, and I think what's most important to Alaskans is that if we're looking at reorganizing or restructuring how we do taxes and spending within the state government, that we're also taking into effect GDP growth or economic growth within the state. And if we're taking a disciplined approach to solving the problem now in the current years or maybe in the next 5 to 6 years to put us in a position of more economic growth and better stability of spending later, we can get to that with greater economic growth in the future. And that, I think that's what that's modeling right there, to show that we can stay underneath the spending limit and still grow state spending with economic growth, as opposed to just taking more of the available revenue from different sources and not focusing on economic growth. Please continue. That's your last slide.
That was my last slide, Mr.
Okay. Questions? Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair, can you tell us at the 11% cap, how far over the budget is that we just passed? Like a figure, like how much is that is above that?
Through the chair, Representative Gray, what I have here is the governor's amended budget as a representation. Where the House is relative to that is somewhat upwards of $175 million-ish, given the education portion that was added. So it would look a little higher even. I couldn't tell you the dollar value right off the top of my head.
Do you know if it would touch the red line?
I don't believe so, no. But I can get back to you on that. I mean, you're looking at, if I look at this correctly, let's see if I go back to the numbers. Oops. I didn't include the 11%, but if I'm looking at this roughly at the 11, I'm at the budget here with the government is roughly 5.5 billion, and adding 200 million, you're not going to be at that 13% line.
Thank you. So, I'm so sorry. Follow up through the chair.
No, don't be sorry.
175. So we're. Would you say that it's the education that puts us about 175 million over the new statutory limit that we're talking about, or would it be a little bit more than that? I'm just thinking, like, if we need to cut our budget by hundreds of millions of dollars, I just want to kind of get a figure.
Through the chair, Representative Gray, if I'm looking at this picture right now, the limit for FY24, if this was in effect right now, is roughly, I'm just going off the graph, I don't have the exact figures, but let's just say it's 5.5 billion. And the governor's budget is reading the graph, it's going to be a couple hundred million. Well, I wish I knew the capital budget this year. He proposed like 80 something, 150 million. Let's just say it's 150 million. And then you add, I really need the data. I'm sorry. I have the data for everything but the 11 and 13%. But I do not believe by adding that 175 and change that you hit that red line yet. And that's all assuming this was in effect today, which it's not. And the other key factor there is, as the chairman mentioned, there's this two-thirds vote ability to break the limit, the statute. Well, you can always break the statutory limit, but to break the using capital spending. So assuming capital spending.
Right. Through the chair, though, the blue line, the red line, it would take years to get to. We would have to put it on the ballot. It would be a long time. But the blue line we could get to pretty quick.
Well, I mean, if I might respond to that, I think that the red line could be reached with additional revenue. We could reach it next year if we just had more revenue. Wouldn't necessarily take more years. It just takes more revenue.
To the chair, my understanding is that this is a spending cap. And so regardless of how much revenue we have, we wouldn't want to spend it. Whatever extra revenue we had that goes above the spending cap, we would grow the permanent fund. We'd put it towards the permanent fund. So I'm just trying to wrap my head around last night talking about ways of redoing the PMV formula, which gives us a lot more revenue now, and instituting a stricter spending cap, which means that on one hand, we might pull in $600 million more from the POMV, but we would be, I guess, doing that so that we could direct it towards the permanent fund, because we would need to be cutting our budget to reach that blue line. But maybe I'm not quite reading it right.
I'm afraid I'm not following you.
Okay.
In your explanation there.
I guess he's going to speak in a moment, but I think we talk about a revenue cap and a spending cap. And my understanding is that blue line is a spending cap. So regardless of how much revenue we have, it doesn't change the blue line.
Yeah, okay. So I misunderstood you. Okay. I was looking at the bars and thinking of the blue bar on top.
I was talking about the blue line.
Blue line. My apologies.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. With that, I will invite the presenters, the sponsors of the bill, the legislation, to come forward.
For the record, this is a Representative Stapp from House District 32 and my chief of staff.
For the record, Bernard Otto, staff to Representative Stapp.
Thank you. And I would like to bring up HB 38 before us first, and we'll discuss the amendments for HB 38. I'm brief at ease. Representative McCabe.
Thank you. I move Amendment 1 to HB 38.
Object.
Okay. So I will just describe this amendment since I'm bringing it forward. The amendment amends HB, Committee Substitute for House Bill 38, Judiciary. On page 2, lines 4 through 5, it deletes the words Federal Bureau Responsible for Economic Analysis According to Federal and inserts State Government as Prescribed by, and then on page 3, lines 9 through 10, it deletes Federal Bureau Responsible for Economic Analysis According to Federal, and inserts State Government as Prescribed by. And this is in keeping with the changes that were made in Judiciary to HGR 2, to remove reference to the federal agency that gives us the GDP numbers, and refers that to state government instead. So this is, I wouldn't say conforming language for the bill, but it's keeping the two bills with the same language. Any questions? You keep your objection?
I withdraw my objection.
Okay, hearing no other objections, amendment number 1 passes. Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move amendment number 2.
Object. Sorry, object.
I wasn't going to let you get away with not objecting. Right? Thank you. So, amendment number 2 to Committee Substitute for House Bill 38 Judiciary reads as follows. On page 2, line 3, the amendment proposes to delete the 11.5 and insert 11. And this is changing the percentage in HB 38, this the limit from 11.5 to 11%. Questions? Representative Gray.
To the chair, why change it from 11.5 to 11%?
Thank you, Representative Gray. Great question. It is a really great question. So permit me to expand just a little bit on that answer. The fiscal plan that I have helped Ways and Means put forward addresses basically 4 of the components of the Fiscal Policy Working Group. One of the main components that has not been addressed thus far is a reduction in spending that was part of the Fiscal Policy Working Group recommendations. By amending the percentage from 11.5 to 11, it forces us to have a conversation about also reducing spending by a couple hundred million dollars as part of the conversation with a fiscal policy or a fiscal plan moving forward. So it is keeping with the fiscal policy working group, the integrity of that working group report as we put forward the plan that's coming out of Ways and Means. And that is, in a nutshell, why I'm moving it, suggesting that we remove it from 11 to 11.5 to 11. And there's a corresponding amendment within the HJR that does a similar thing. Follow up, Representative Gray.
Thank you. So as our presenter last night at Ways and Means mentioned that a POMV isn't, in effect, a spending cap, and we were discussing changing that POMV formula to take more money now, it kind of goes along with everything that we're talking about in here, possible sales tax, possible income tax, possible change to oil tax policy, all of these revenue increasing potential. But I feel that reducing the spending cap, and you can just correct me, and reducing the spending cap from 11.5 to 11%, well, it disincentivizes all of that other work that we're doing because we wouldn't need to get more revenue. We would just need to cut our current budget by hundreds of millions of dollars. So I think if the answer to our current budget dilemma is to cut the current budget to meet the new spending cap, then we don't need to do the other parts. So I guess I'm just questioning how it all fits together.
Thank you, Representative Gray. I guess I'll just respond by saying that the current deficit that we in our current budget that we sent over to the other body was over $500 million. So right there it says that we're either going to take revenue – I'm sorry, we're going to take money from savings accounts of some kind to balance that, or we're going to have a conversation about reducing. And as we're – and I guess another – a way to answer this too is that the fiscal plan that we're trying to put together is kind of outside of the annual budget because that's one conversation. It's kind of surrounding the annual budget, and we want it to surround the next budget as well so that it comes together smoother and it's more balanced and it's more stable. So the conversation about reducing spending or spending out of savings is a very valid conversation for the current year's budget, and it's also a valid conversation for next year's future budgets. Is what does that limit need to be in regards to where we're currently spending and where we want to be spending in the future?
Follow up,
Representative Gray.
So I used it as an example because it's a very concrete example of something that we have in front of us right now, that this new blue line being lower would in real time affect our thinking about our current budget. But I understand that we're looking at a fiscal policy going out into the future. I also understand that if we had a massive growth in GDP next year, then the limit could be extremely high. And we therefore wouldn't be talking about having to reduce. We'd talk about where are we going to get our money from to be able to we don't have to reach the limit, but, you know, it wouldn't come into play. I think, and I guess this is a more philosophical thing, and maybe it's to the sponsor of the bill, how does the government make the GDP go up a whole lot this year?
I'm thinking that I'm the one that's pushing GDP.
You talked about in the third person here.
Ask me a question. Yeah.
I will respond to that just to say that I don't expect the government to raise the GDP at all. It isn't government's function to raise GDP. And I wouldn't expect the GDP is going to raise, like, immediately. It isn't something that would just raise immediately.
Final follow-up.
Representative Gray.
My fear is that we're going to be controlled by something that we can't influence or that we have little influence in, that we're going to tie ourselves to the GDP. And we're going to say that's something out there that we hope improves, but the government doesn't have a role in it. And if the government doesn't have a role in it, and we're dependent upon that GDP for determining how much we can spend, I feel like it creates a disconnect. That's
my final follow-up. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Through the Chair to Representative Gray, I'm going to take a crack at a few of these questions, if you don't mind, Chair and members of the committee. So firstly, I kind of remind the committee that the bill in front of us has conditional language tied to the passage of HDR 2, so you wouldn't have the inaction of one without the other. So in terms of the existing spending cap, looking at the current budget that passed the body not too long ago, remind the members of that budget was technically unfunded. In order to be funded, would require a 30 vote threshold, so you would effectively ideally meet the 27 vote threshold for the constitutional appropriation in the event. So one would assume if 30 people would vote for the budget, you would probably have 27 people vote for the spending in that budget. Although I suppose you could not have a scenario when that would happen, but it'd be very strange. Regarding PONV and oil, as far as revenue, I remind the members that PONV's draws are based on investment returns year to year minus inflationary pressure. Sitting on House Finance, the permit fund is still projecting a 7% return on the fund's investment return for FY24. The reality of that actually materializing is probably not. I would suspect the fund's investment returns in this fiscal year to be considerably lower than the 7% average return. And finally, the other aspect of existing revenues is based on the price per barrel for oil. So just because you can have a budget proposed before the body, in our case, the executive's budget was not funded, does not necessarily mean that existing revenue projections will actually materialize in reality. So I hope that answers the questions.
For the record, Bernard Aoto, and through the Chair to Representative Gray, and also if there were scenarios in which the revenues exceeded the spending cap, it would be up to the legislature to decide how to appropriate that extra spending, which could include things like investing in the permanent fund dividends or also investing in increasing the CBR amounts as well.
Yeah. One last follow-up to the question as far as how can government actually affect GDP I forgot that aspect of the question. My answer to that question would be you can actually affect that through targeted strong capital investment. So our legislature is currently looking at certain capital investment projects, i.e. Bradley Lake, upgrading the interties. The ultimate result of that would be to reduce the costs of energy to interior residents and residents all throughout the rail belt. So it would not be much of a leap, I don't believe, to infer that much cheaper energy for residents of Alaska would translate into much more spendable income. Individuals in the private sector would therefore take those savings that through that process and invest them in the domestic economy, thereby driving gross domestic product. Thank you.
I would also like to bring us to focus too that the legislation before us doesn't take effect immediately, right? It doesn't take effect until fiscal year 26. And so there is a delay here.
Yep. For the record, Bernardo, to the Chair, yes, theoretically it would take place in 2026 with the passage of HDR 2 by a vote of the people. Yes.
Representative McCabe and then Representative Grimm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I heard that statement about how the PONV would effectively be a spending cap, and I seem to remember a discussion about that during the Fiscal Policy Working Group, and that might be true if the only money you had came from the permanent fund. But we have much more money to spend than just that 50% of the 5% PONV. So yes, it's a spending cap on the money that comes from the permanent fund, from the earnings. But if the price of oil goes up and we have a whole ton of money coming in outside of the POMV, then we will absolutely need a spending cap, or we will spend it on all kinds of cool stuff that I have in mind. I don't know about you, but I got great plans for bridges and railroads and Kubota and all kinds of stuff. So we absolutely would need a spending cap. The POMV, that statement that the POMV is effective spending cap is wildly inaccurate. Yeah, I get it.
Did you have a response, Representative Stapp?
Thank you, Chair Carpenter. For the record, this represented staff to the chair, Representative Graves. So I would refer to the PLFB cap as effectively a revenue cap and not a spending cap. It effectively restricts one type of revenue. And especially when this committee is talking about adding other types of revenue, those would not be subject to a PLFB cap.
Thank you, Representative Stapp. Representative Groh.
As someone who ran on a spending cap as part of an overall fiscal plan, I wanted to ask Mr. Chair, with your amendments, and particularly the one to the statutory limit, we talked earlier in this meeting about how the budget would be over, the budget we just passed would be over the statutory limit as proposed. How much more would the budget be over, the budget we just passed be over the statutory limit that you're proposing?
Representative Groh, I think that question is what we just asked and answered partially with Mr. Carpenter up here and the graph, and we didn't have exact data. He didn't have exact data on this graph to show it.
Maybe 100 million more. Maybe
that's what he said, okay. Based on the data that's on that graph.
Okay, but I just wanted to make it clear. It said it was 400 or 500 million a point. And so you're talking about half a point here, going from 11.5 to 11. So maybe 200, 250 based on that additionally above. Okay.
And in reality, Representative Groh, to your point, what we're really talking about is not this year's budget.
Right.
We are as if it might, the spending limit were in effect, but we're actually talking about what would be, what we would have to deal with in fiscal year 26.
Absolutely. Mr. Chair, as Representative Gray said, it's a useful, concrete, recent example that we just lived through for many hours.
You have a follow-up?
Thanks.
For the record, Bernard Otto, through the chair to Representative Groh. In regards to the budget that was passed by the House this year, that's the projections that were presented in the graph are based on the governor's amended budget, which was reduced by the House by about 500 million or so, and then with the failure of the CBR vote, it did have another 500 or so deficit. So anything that, and in effect, that would be as that 508 million would zero out. So it actually is now below the statutory cap if you really thought about it.
Okay. Well, I think the value of that conversation would be if we had it in a graph to be able to see it. Yeah. I can't visualize it myself. But thank you for bringing that up.
Yes, through the chair, staff to Representative Stapp brought up that if we had additional revenue, we could decide how to use it. And this is going to be a question about the constitutional limit, which maybe I should wait and ask it when we get to that. But
why don't we do that?
Okay.
Any other questions? See no more questions. Do you maintain your objection?
I maintain my objection.
Okay. Will you please call the roll?
Representative McCabe?
Yes.
Representative Gray?
No.
Representative Tilton?
Yes.
Representative Ballard is absent. Representative Groh?
No.
Representative McCabe?
Yes.
Chair Carpenter.
Yes.
That is four yeas, two nays.
So on a vote of four yeas and two nays, amendment number two has passed the committee. Okay. Are there any other additional comments about House Bill 38 before we seek a will of committee? Representative McCabe.
Sure, I'd just like to compliment Representative Stapp for working on this. It's been in his mind almost since he got here, on his mind and in the works, and as well as his staff, and I appreciate you bringing it forward. It's we talk a lot, and sometimes all that talk just goes by the wayside and we forget about actually doing something. So I appreciate you putting it together and the effort it took.
Representative Groh?
Yes. Representative Stapp, I put some various points on the record before in a previous committee, but I do think it's useful in this new committee to ask the structure that this proposed constitutional amendment and bill would set up. And as you point out, one is linked to the other in terms of them going to effect simultaneously. The structure would be that there would be certain things would be limited and certain things would not be. And you talked about the risk, and as all you could come out of this committee table, the risk of increased spending if the state receives higher revenues through a windfall, perhaps caused by higher oil prices. In previous years, when such windfalls have come, what categories of spending have gone up the fastest?
Through the chair to Representative Groh, I appreciate the history test, you know. So in typical and high revenue years in the state, you have seen operational budgetary increases, but the largest spending increases have been in capital projects or in the capital budget. I'd put a caveat on that to say not all capital spending is subject to actually a good return on investment principle. So there's a difference between building a power plant and then, I guess I would say, grain silos in Valdez. So.
But the
Representative Groh.
Follow-up, I note that there's an exception that treats capital spending more favorably, despite the fact that it's, as you acknowledge, been a big source of the spikes, is what tends to go up the most in a spike.
Through the chair to Representative Groh. Yeah, I would say that, so again, not all capital spending is necessarily great or bad. I would say the fact that you have a tangible and measurable cap and the spending cap itself is tied to private sector performance. My opinion would be members of the body, when they think about long-term capital investment in our state, because of the nature of the spending cap, you are incentivized to actually think about a return on investment in projects that we decide to spend our limited revenue sources on. So you're going to get more projects like Bradley Lake or like and that are going to be designed to really help everyday Alaskans meet their needs and challenges in the long term. So I think the point that you raise is actually really valid, and I think that it's really well measured. But I actually think this bill before the committee and subject constitutional amendment actually incentivized the type of correct behavior that would solve that issue.
Okay.
Representative Groh?
And of course, per-fine dividends are entirely exempted. Isn't that correct?
Through the chair to Representative Groh, that is correct.
And it's per-fine dividends. Since the delinking that occurred in 2016, that have gone up the most as well in spikes when windfalls have occurred.
Through the chair to Representative Groh. So yeah, that depends on how you want to define go up in a strictly monetary solution. I get a dollar amount. Yeah, in a percent of formula, the answer is no. If you look at the historic formula, this body has effectively paid dividends out. I think that answers questions.
Representative Groh?
Yeah, I guess. As you know, Representative Stapp, governor of Alaska has a power of veto into the Constitution that bills to raise revenue and appropriation bills or items of low veto become law by affirmative vote of three-fourths of the membership of the legislature. Scholars have pointed out that this makes the governor of Alaska one of the most powerful in the country, if not the most powerful, in the sense that some would argue that, and as I said, I ran on an additional effective spending cap as part of the overall fiscal plan. Some would note that in addition to the PMMP limit, another spending cap is provided in the Constitution itself by the governor's own power of veto as set out in the Constitution.
through the chair to Representative Groh, I mean, vetoes can be overridden yes, it is a difficult subject and a difficult task. But also, I would think if you're going to rely on the executive to hold total authority over the spending of not only our body but the other body, and kind of leave it up to one individual to have to hold the spending down, I think that's probably, if you would actually design the system structurally to have that outcome intended, that's probably kind of a violation of your fiduciary responsibility as members of an elected body. I mean, I don't think you should be in the business of trying to pass budgets and then asking the executive to trim them down intentionally. I don't think that serves the purpose of what we try to do here. So,
while I enjoy the philosophical conversation, I'm not sure what that has to do with the bill before us.
In the overall context, Mr. Chair, of like how Alaska structure works, you've talked a lot about how we have to see this, not just in, you know, in terms of this budget this year, yeah, or just a narrow question of looking at one small part of it. You have frequently pointed to the importance of looking at the whole. I do think that that's a useful context to point out here in terms of what Alaska's actual problems and structure are.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Groh. Representative McCabe?
Thanks. So, through the chair, I'm curious, you know, Article 9, Section 16 of our Constitution suggests that one-third of our budget should be capital projects. So I don't, you know, the charts that we saw earlier also suggest that we have virtually never done that. So I'm wondering if this spending cap with the capital budget sort of maneuver in there would be helpful in forcing us to actually follow our Constitution.
Yeah, through the chair to Representative McCabe, I would say kind of to try to skirt around the issue of following the Constitution or not, I would say the intent of the bill before you is to effectively ensure that the mindset that the framers of the document had to reserve part of the state's revenues to build the state for the needs of future Alaskans is certainly behind the nucleus of some of the concepts behind the bill.
Representative McCabe.
So I think that sort of adds to the conversation that people need to understand that we have billions of dollars of infrastructure deficit right now with bridges and roads and various falling down things, ports, airports, that sort of thing, in addition to all the new stuff that we want because of our increased population. So I think it's important for Alaskans watching to understand that not only are we dealing with a sort of a structural deficit right now, but we have got to start thinking about our infrastructure deficit and finding ways a path forward through that.
Yeah, through the chair to Representative McCabe. Yeah, I would say that you know, part of the nucleus behind the concept of a gross domestic product-based spending cap is to try to incentivize the right behavior, i.e. thinking about what is best for all Alaskans long-term. To your point regarding capital projects, I would ask the committee to visualize what type of a different state we would be in the event that we had capitalized on our opportunity to build, say, a Susitna Dam in the 90s, and we had delivered 7 cents a kilowatt power through the entire rail belt, the effect that would have on PCE and the amount of investment and development of our state that we could have been achieved over the last 2 or 3 decades. So I think that's the type of forward thinking that most of the people in our state would be encouraged to hear us discuss in this body and get excited about what type of a bright future they could have for their children and grandchildren. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Stapp. To my point of needing economic growth within the state, exactly. Any other questions or comments? Okay. What is the will of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I move to report committee substitute for House Bill 38, Judiciary, version 33-LS0295/B, out of committee as amended with individual recommendations and accompanying zero fiscal note.
Hearing no objection.
I'll object for purposes of discussion. Mr. Chair, if I may.
Representative Groh.
Thank you. You've said repeatedly throughout the committee meetings here that we're looking at a total package and we're reporting out a spending limit proposal, one that I've pointed out the issues with before and believed to need to be substantially amended. I pointed out in a previous committee and some here, but I hadn't made other comments earlier. But we're putting it out without the other parts that you've discussed. And I think it would be useful to discuss that decision because I do think, I said I support a spending cap as part of an overall fiscal package. And I, especially with the less than the 30 days left in the session, I think it'd be useful to understand more about what the plan would be.
Thank you, Representative Groh. Let me take a brief at ease to see if I can answer your question in a visual fashion. I thought we would have a visual slide to be able to show you what the intention is. My commitment to you and to Alaskans is that we will provide five pieces of legislation out of this committee as soon as possible. That is the fiscal plan. The first start of this are the two pieces of legislation that we have before us. The next two would be your HDR 7 and HB 110. I'm sorry, yeah, 109, 110. Both of those, all three of those pieces of legislation. So
HDR 9 is the one that I introduced.
But HDR 7 is the one I'm going to send out.
Okay, I just want to make sure you said your. That's what confused me, Mr. Chairman.
And HDR 7 and HB 110 and 109.
Okay.
Those will be before us here next week. to your question exactly.
Okay. So that's five pieces, Mr. Chair. Follow up. The two spending cap ones plus HDR 7, HB 110, and HB 109. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Is your objection maintained?
Can we have a restatement of the motion? Is the motion for individual?
The motion, yes, it is.
Okay. I withdraw my objection.
Okay. Okay, there being no further objection, committee substitute for House Bill 38, as amended, is reported out of committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note. Without objection, authority is given to legislative legal to make any necessary technical and conforming changes. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. Back on the record. All right, we'll now bring up HDR 2 to take up amendments. Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Amendment 1 to HJR 2.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Gray. And for purpose of discussion, I'll explain the amendment here. This is Amendment number 2 to Committee Substitute House Joint Resolution 2 from Judiciary. The amendment reads, page 2, line 3, delete 14 and insert 13. And on page 2, line 7, delete 14 and insert 13. Questions? Representative Gray.
Yes, to the chair. So it was a half a percentage change on the previous bill, and this is a full percentage change. So I am curious if you can explain the change from 14 to 13.
Yeah, so the change to the resolution mirrors an opposite change that was made in the other body to the piece of legislation that they had that went the opposite direction. So we brought it down a commensurate amount and kind of matched it with the model for what we're just reviewed here. That was the reason.
Follow up to the chair, just for clarification, so the other body raised it a percentage?
That's correct.
Okay. I guess one more follow-up. So there's not a we're mirroring them. There's not a specific other reason why it was a full percentage as opposed to a half a percentage.
Representative Gray, other than it maintains the integrity of the model by dropping it a percentage, none of the modeling that we have done shows that we would be breaking through that upper limit with a percentage drop. Could have made it a percentage and a half, and I think we still would have been okay, but just maintained it at 1%.
Thank you.
Representative Gray.
Sorry, I'll follow. If no one else has any other questions, I'll follow up with my question to Bernard Iotto. There was discussion on the previous bill about if we had extra revenue that the body could decide how to direct that revenue. Can you just talk a little bit more about what we can and cannot do with additional revenue and still not violate the constitutional spending limit?
For the record, Bernard Iotto, staff to Representative Staff, through the chair to Representative Gray. In our first presentation to this committee, we had presented a bunch of exceptions to constitutional spending cap, and it would be up to the body if there are any revenues that exceeded said cap, what kind of spending it would go to, whether it be any of those exceptions.
Representative Staff.
For the record, it's Representative Staff through the chair to Representative Gray. I'll bite and answer the question. So, yeah, so effectively the legislature could decide to pay bigger dividends. It could decide to pay back the constitutional budget reserve. It could decide to take the entirety of the appropriation and put that toward the actual value of the permanent fund itself, which would probably be my argument, i.e. the more capitalization of the fund, the more revenue the state will have long term. You know, in theory, you could give $15 billion to ADA, though I don't think I'd recommend that course of action. So,
follow up. But we couldn't do something like increase the BSA, for example.
Through the chair to Representative Gray, I like the bait and switch. I would say that in order for you to hit the constitutional limit, I would imagine there would be quite a big hefty BSA in that funding already, given the fact that we're several hundreds of millions of dollars away from that. However, in the event that a legislature spent to the cap, you would not be able to add any additional operational budgetary expense if you are already at a constitutional hard limit. I would challenge you to how to actually get to that point, though. It's a good interesting thought process.
And through the chair, Representative Gray, for the record, Bernard Iotto, there is also an additional exception for emergency declarations from the governor. So if there were additional operating expenditures to address an emergency, then that could also be used.
Thank you. So following up on that line of questioning, would it be possible for us to just give the money to the teachers in the classrooms where it would actually do some good? Or would we not be able to do that either? So we would.
Well, through the chair to Representative McCabe. Well, in effect, you could redesign the concept, the foundation formula, and you could take all school facilities and you could put them under the capital aspect of that, or you could put them under SOE. So I would say that the scenario that Representative Gray is painting is intriguing, but you could probably figure out a way to be able to have a well, robust, and funded education system through a dozen or two other dozen different type of mechanisms. And I'm sure that the members of this body are quite intelligent enough to figure out how to do that. So,
thanks.
And I guess just from what I know of spending limits in other states and other times that they've been enacted, that it is it's in the nature of the legislature to, from time to time, try to find a way around the spending limits. And I wouldn't expect that to change. Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair, I would just say, I've said it before, other people have said it before, that historically our legislature has put money towards spending when we could have spent it. We have made responsible decisions in the past when we've had a lot of excess funding in the past, I don't know, 15 years. So I think that sometimes, like, just philosophically, I feel that an issue I have with the spending cap is that we're assuming that we would overspend, when I would say we have a couple of examples of where we put a lot of money to repay debt and towards the fund itself when we, you know, weren't being forced to. So I feel like with that history from us that maybe we don't need this constitutional spending limit, especially if it's going to be really hard for us to reach. Thank you.
Thank you, so Representative Gray. Representative McKay?
Mr. Chair, I think it's important to just note that a lot of the deposits that were made in years past, and I invite anyone here on the committee to help me, were oil tax settlements some of them were pretty big. And I think that all went into the constitutional budget reserve, statutory budget reserve, as I recall. You had to do that. Couldn't spend it. Had to, by rule, it had to go into savings. Maybe you can clarify that, but I do recall there were a lot of oil tax settlements that the money got saved. It didn't get spent. But those days are kind of behind us now. I don't think there's going to be. I remember reading where they didn't anticipate there was going to be a lot of big oil tax settlements in our future.
Thank you, Representative McKay. Representative Groh, do you have a response?
I do. Mr. Representative Gray is, Mr. Chair, it's also correct that when the state did get some windfalls exclusive of the different from the oil tax settlements, which Representative McKay is referencing, when the state did get some big windfall through higher oil prices, there were substantial deposits made to the last grant fund. The legislature removed by itself on a discretionary basis. Representative Gray is absolutely correct about that.
Thank you. Representative McCabe.
So thank you through the chair, Representative Gray. Yes, there is language in statute, basically, that says that we can inflation-proof the fund after the dividends are paid. So some of it went to that. Both Governors Palin and Parnell, I believe, put money into paying down the $7 billion retirement fund, PERS and TERS fund, that's still, I mean, at the time it was $13 billion, or close to $13 billion. Now it's a little bit over six, apparently, but we haven't been paying that down. They did put some money into their windfalls, into there, if you will. We had one $4 billion Scrivener's error that went into the corpus. But keep in mind, the CBR is, we owe the CBR a ton of money. And so if you're using the last 15 years to demonstrate or think that we haven't been overspending, you only have to look at the spending that came out of the CBR in the last, it's been less than 15 years, it's been like 10 years, to see that that's simply not true. We have been overspending and outspending, and we have got to rein that in somehow, and I think this goes a long way towards doing that.
Any more discussion on the amendment before us? Okay, what is the...
I maintain my objection.
You maintain your objection. Okay. Will the recorder please call the roll?
Yes.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes. So on a vote of 4 yea and 2 nay, amendment number 1 has been adopted. And we have no other amendments for this piece of legislation. So are there any other questions and comments before we seek the will of the committee? Okay, what is the will of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I move to report committee substitute for House Joint Resolution number 2, version 33-LS0294/Bravo. Out of committee as amended with individual recommendations and accompanying zero fiscal notes.
Hearing no objection, HDR 2 is reported out of committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note. Without objection, we'll give the authority to legislative legal to make any necessary technical and conforming changes. And with that, we'll take a brief few things to sign the paperwork. Brief things. Business for tonight. We will be adjourned as of 7:16 p.m. Thank you all.